This is Bob, Groz, and Tom.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio and streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app and 710sports.com.
Hour number two of Bob, Groz, and Tom coming up at the bottom of the hour in case you're just tuning in. We'll bring you up to speed on everything we open the show with. The halftime show coming your way at the bottom of the hour. But right now, we talk some NFL with our buddy from ESPN. He's with us on the Venue Kings hotline. Mike Sando's here. Hey, Mike.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going well. It's going well. Got there are things bubbling with this Seahawks team we got to discuss, most notably Earl Thomas, who up until this point we've kind of parsed, you know, what he said back at the Pro Bowl versus what his agent supposedly said to John Schneider. And then he doesn't show up for mini camps. And then we got a very clear picture of how he's feeling about things from his Instagram post the other day, where he basically said, you know, trade me. You don't want to give me extension, then trade me. I understand it's a business. So I'm curious from your perspective, what do you expect to happen? I've thought, okay, maybe he does the 6-game thing. I'm going to get credit for you know, service time for this season. I'll be a free agent. Or maybe he creates a fake injury so he still gets paid. What do you think happens with him?
You know, I think he would play all the games. I think that it's funny. I remember a story when I can't remember if he was injured or coming off an injury, and I heard the story one time that he was he was not allowed to practice, and he was like so frustrated he like drove home or something. I mean, this guy loves the game; he's going to want to play. But in the meantime, there's this very interesting window, I think, where he has an opportunity to force something to happen, because it feels to me like Seattle has kind of put behind it some of the off-field distractions that have come up with dealing with veteran contracts, whether it was Marshawn Lynch, you know, it was Cam Chancellor for a while. They've had Richard Sherman. And so I think the more noise Earl Thomas makes, and especially if he's staying away, the more likely it is that Seattle would be amenable to doing some kind of a trade. There's still the problem that I don't know that there's a million teams lining up wanting to give a lot for a player who's going to require huge money, even though he's a great player. So that part of it could still be an issue. But if he wants out, and if he thinks the only way he's going to get a long-term deal to his liking is somewhere else, which I think is a reasonable thing for him to think, you know, why not push it a little bit right now and see what can get done? And so maybe he does that. I think there's a chance he could get some, you know, make something happen.
But you don't expect to see him at training camp?
I wouldn't think so.
Or do you?
Yeah, I wouldn't think so. I think he already showed with the minicamp miss that he's willing to use whatever leverage he has. So I think there's a good chance that he – I'd be surprised if he's there right away.
So, what I mean, at some point, if he's there but he's unhappy, are they worried? Again, Groz and I always talk about distraction, being overplayed, and over, you know, the idea of answering questions about somebody somehow is going to take away from your game. But at the same time, this feels like it could become sort of toxic if he's really unhappy, yet he's there and he's around the younger players and all of that. From the Seahawks' perspective, do you feel like they may bend on what they expect in return for him just to rid themselves of the situation, or how do you see them handling this?
Yeah, I do. I think that, you know, initially they, you know, probably wanted, you know, at least maybe they wanted a first round pick, then they wanted a second round pick. At a certain point, you decide, okay, if this is really his last year here, do we want to, you know, put up with the headache of it when we feel like we're excited about our young guys and that's the direction we're going anyway? If he doesn't come to training camp, yes, it's a story they asked Pete Carroll about, and players will be asked about it. But I don't think that in itself is a big distraction where the team then has to make something happen, you know. But you're really deciding as an organization what's the return, what's worth it here once you get into the season. If he's talking about it, if it just doesn't go away, would you rather get something for him now than have to wait? And I think that's just what's in your mind. He's a special player, so you know, I don't think they're looking to move him, but I think they're closer to it than you know, they've probably been in the past.
Is there another team that you think's in the mix at all? All we hear about is Dallas for obvious reasons, mm-hmm. based on what he said when they were out there, all of that. But are there teams we're not talking about that you think would be hot on the Dallas Cowboys' heels to acquire his services?
You know, not really, because I don't know how hot Dallas is. You know, if Dallas was really hot to do it, wouldn't they have, you know, done it by now? You really haven't heard anything tangible. And, you know, that's a part of the situation that Earl Thomas can't control, you know. So it takes another team to want to do it. And Dallas is logical. I think there is some interest from them, but there has been no heat, no smoke coming from specifics of a potential trade. So I don't see, you know, teams lining up at this point, but maybe we get into training camp and there's a contending team that loses a safety to injury. You know, the dynamic starts to change and they're thinking, shoot, we gotta, you know, this guy's a perfect fit. Let's get him and we'll worry about his contract later. And maybe then Seattle gets a, you know, a good pick in return.
Any chance at all the Seahawks just decide to extend him?
I don't think so, because whatever number they'd be willing to do, I think would be lower than what he wants. And so, you know, I feel like they're in a situation where they got burned a little bit by taking care of some of their older guys with third contracts, whether it was, you know, Cam Chancellor, definitely comes to mind. I would think they'd be a little reluctant to do that again, even though Earl Thomas is a great player. He has missed seven games the last couple of years. I don't think so. I think they're going to hold off.
So let's play it out that he's not there for whatever, whether he holds out, whether they trade him, what have you. How big of a step back do you think this defense is going to take? You know, most people are looking at the names that are gone. Whether it was the product, you know, they played a good chunk of the season without Cliff Avril. They played a good chunk of the season without Cam Chancellor last year. Those guys are gone. Michael Bennett's gone. Sherman's gone. And if Earl's gone, do you look at this defense and feel like, okay, they're in trouble, or they're just kind of back where they were when we didn't know who these guys were? More specifically, Sherman and people like that, and Cam Chancellor.
Well, I don't think you can say it anymore. You know, 5 years ago, you could say, well, just watch. They got these other guys, and you knew they kept having other guys who stepped up. I think now they want to do that, and they're hopeful their coaching staff's going to be able to develop some of those guys, but there's no replacing Earl Thomas. I think 2 years ago, they were absolutely in trouble when he missed the games. Remember? I mean, the stats were just off the charts. When he was not in there, they were not a good defense. I think last year, you know, they had protected themselves a little bit more, and so I think it's a big hit, but I don't think it's like, I don't think they become a bottom 10 defense without him, but I think their ability to be in the top 10, he could have that type of impact, where if he's there, you might have a chance to do that. But if he's not there, I could see them being closer to middle of the pack.
Really? Because it seems to me that you're talking about a secondary that would be very thin. You're counting on Shaquille Griffin after 1 year to be able to step into Richard Sherman's position and at least approximate the production you got from him. Bradley McDougal showed himself to be a good player, but everyone else is a question mark, aren't they?
They are. I think they need to develop another pass rusher. Depending on how you look at the stats, you know, last year, I believe, over the second half of the season, at least by our defensive efficiency metric, I think they were sixth, which was way higher than I would have thought. They were. Some of that's who you play, obviously, too. But I think that with sort of the defensive culture they've got, the strength they've got at the linebacker position, you throw Earl in there with some, you know, some talented prospects in the secondary. You got Frank Clark. You got Nas Jones, who's been pretty good. Jerron Reed, they've been very happy with. You definitely need another rusher to step up. I mean, I think that's a given. They hoped it was Malik McDowell. It's not going to be. But if you get another guy to step up, why couldn't you be, you know, threatening for the top 10 if you were better than expected the second half of last year when a ton more guys were missing?
Is there a particular player going into this training camp that you're more interested in seeing versus any other, whether it's a rookie or somebody who's bouncing back, anything like that?
Yeah, I think to me, what always put Seattle over the top defensively was just the pass rush. You know, do they have the depth of the pass rush? And I think that's especially true when you play the type of scheme that they have. Remember, they're not a team that's drafting lockdown corners in the first round. They have good corners, but they're playing a different type of defense. And so remember when they lost in the playoffs to Atlanta, Russell's rookie year, I believe, they just couldn't get home late in the games. And so what did they do? They added Bennett. They had Avril. You really developed that rush. And so is it Rasheem Green or, you know, who is it? Who is it? Deion Jordan? Is it one of those guys that you've kind of got on the periphery that you need to step up? I think that's the position for sure. That if I were the GM of the team and we're asked, okay, if there's one position you could have a guy come out of the woodworks and really be a Pro Bowler, to me, it's there. It's rushing the passer.
I just, Mike, I have a lot less optimism than a lot of people do because I have a hard time getting past thinking about the game against the Rams last year late against Seattle, which was the worst loss of the Pete Carroll era in many, many ways. They were 6-3 before Richard Sherman got injured, and then the rest of the way were an under 500 team. You know, it just, yep. And they let a lot of that leadership go. I think there are a lot of question marks.
Yeah, I hear you. Now, I believe Bobby Wagner was either on one leg or was hardly playing and in that game. Wasn't he severely diminished?
I think you're right.
In the Ram game. So
yeah, that's when, was that when Earl said something about him playing and they got in a little.
Yeah, I mean, that was a nightmarish game that I think was very telling, and that game never would have happened in the past, right? I mean,
never.
That was impossible. That was impossible.
Even with a guy or two injured, that game would never have happened in the past.
Yep, and now they had a ton of guys, and I think that, you know, now you have an off season to, you know, to sort of know where you're at, and I think they finished better than that. They weren't like that every week, but no doubt that was a shock to them, and that has to be in our minds as a possibility of what could happen. But I don't think that that's going to be the norm. We may see an occasional terrible game defensively. I think we're going to see that, or they're not what they were. But I still think that there's a chance they can be, a good defense. Maybe not in the top five. That would surprise me. But if they're anywhere from 6 to 15, to me, that's pretty good.
Do you have any sense of what this offensive line might look like? Because that was such a massive problem and has been a problem for him. And now you've got a new coach of the line. You brought in a new piece in DJ Fluker and second year for Posick. I don't know what to expect of a Fetty. Yeah. Should it be substantially better in your opinion, or is this a wait and see with the new coach out there?
Well, I think it should be better with, you know, Dwayne Brown being healthy, having an off season with the line coach, and that's a big difference, right? And then George Fant coming back probably isn't being talked about much. I mean, look, when they had to rely on him as their left tackle, that's different than just having him as a potential piece. So, you know, this is not an inside information guess. This is not from watching the mini camps. I just thought that eventually you'd have Brown and Fant as your tackles, kick a Fetty inside, see what Fluker can give you. I wouldn't be real optimistic at this stage of his career that he's going to be a 16 game upper tier guard, but he's in the mix too. Obviously you got Britt Posick is up to what, 320. I think Posick's at least a okay player on that line. And then you're hoping that we had this animated discussion last year about was it the backs or was it the line, right? Remember the running backs and line? That was one of our best discussions. So you hope that upgrading the running back position helps out the line too. And they don't have to be a top 10 line. They just can't be a bottom two line. And so I think they have a chance to not be a bottom two line. They have a chance to maybe have the 20th best line.
Right? There you go.
If you have the 20th best line with good backs or even the 25th best line with good backs and the quarterback they've got, I don't think it's going to crush their offense. I think they can still do what they need to do.
Well, we'll see if they have good backs or not, because they thought they did last year, and they certainly did not. What is your expectation for what Shaquem Griffin is going to give to the Seahawks on the field this year?
I think he's going to be better than where he was drafted. You know, I understand that why general managers in a league are not wanting to be the guy that drafted somebody who has that disability, but the guy just played really well when he played. And I think coming in, ton of energy, staff that's not afraid to play young guys, I think he's going to be a real positive contributor, and I think he's going to be, you know, have some effective rushes for them. And I think it's exciting. I think that's what this team needs after sort of the staleness of, you know, like what Richard Sherman keeps talking about, how, you know, it just got old. Well, this is fresh. This is new. How can you not feel great about it? And I think there's talent there.
Hey, let me ask you about a team in their division. The L.A. Rams signed Brandon Cooks to a 5-year, $80 million extension, hasn't played a game for him yet. How surprised were you by that move, considering you've got maybe the best defensive player in the game on the roster waiting for a new contract? The timing of it seems a little odd.
It does to me, too. You know, and I think that they needed, as much as Sammy Watkins didn't have great stats, I think, you know, just from talking to the guys I know who watch the film or the coaches, he was open a lot. He helped their offense a lot. So they needed to have that down the field speed component. And this is a young player, a good player. You could make a case that you'd rather have him than take your chances on some wide receiver in the first round when you know how, you know, that's not even a 50-50 proposition. So I get it. It's just one more piece of, you know, even Ndamukong Suh comes in for $14 million. You've patched together this roster that's pretty cool to look at right now, but I don't know. I think it's hard to not take care of guys in the right order. And so it surprised me that Aaron Donald hasn't gotten a deal done. Maybe he does before the season, but it just doesn't seem, it seemed like it would have been done by now. So they're an exciting team that I think will probably do well. But if it goes south a little bit, if something happens unexpectedly, the quarterback gets dinged up or Gurley gets dinged up, I think that could be a really interesting one to try to manage in the locker room.
Well, the interesting part of the story to me is the Rams have, according to this story on ESPN, $2.29 million remaining in salary cap space, according to ESPN stats and info, and remain in the process of working on a long-term extension for reigning NFL Defensive Player of the Year Aaron Donald. So if you've got $2.29 remaining in salary cap, I know you can do all kinds of crazy things with push, you know, backloading and bonuses and all that, but it still doesn't sound like it gives him much to work with in terms of giving him a deal that would be worthy of his talents.
Yeah, but I mean, Kevin Demoff and Tony Pastore do their contracts. I mean, they'll find a way. That's not you can easily move stuff around. It's not like they've got a bunch of, they're upside down with a bunch of old guys and a bunch of prorated money that's gonna crush you. I think if you get a deal done, if you get a deal with Aaron Donald, you find a way to make it work. And it could involve getting deals with other guys too. You know, maybe whenever you do add years to someone's deal, you can lower their cap number if they have a high one now. So yeah, it's something would have to be done, but you know, Demoff in his contracts does palindromes. He does the numbers so they read the same way backwards to forwards. Cause as a guy from Dartmouth, it's just too boring to do the deals. They're too easy to do. I think they can figure out a way to get Aaron Donald in there.
Well, it doesn't matter what they have on the salary cap this year if they're talking about an extension anyway, does it?
It could be a good point. What's Donald's number? And if you look at what Donald's number is this year, you could probably work within that. You know, and you can extend it out and make the hits be the hits be managed over multiple years.
And let me ask you, if they do get a deal done with him before the season starts, would that qualify as making up for not doing it in order, or that would be in order? Like if they told them, look, we're taking care of it.
If he does a deal, he'll be happy with the deal.
Got it.
Right?
Yeah, that's what I'm asking.
I just, you know, it's hard to do. It's hard to bring in a bunch of guys from other teams and tell your own guys that they matter to you. You know, and so like Alec Ogletree a year ago was their middle linebacker, and the things they talked about him, core player, represents everything they want. They sent him to a long-term deal, and then months later, they just trade him away and then bring in Marcus Peters and Aqib Talib and Ndamukong Suh, who, as good as they are, no one is saying those things about them, that they represent everything, what it means to be a Ram or what it means to be a whatever teams they've been on. I think that can complicate things for the long term. Now, that being said, if I'm the Rams, would I rather have those guys or not have them? I think I'd rather have them and deal with it.
Yeah, it is strange. Again, the massive commitment made to a guy who has yet to play a single game for the Rams and Cooks, and I get that he's only 24 and he's got a ton of upside, but, you know, you did commit to a guy who has yet to strap it up for the team, and you've
got... What I love is, you know, Sean McVay, during the games, is sitting on the Gatorade cooler when they're on defense, right? Because it's Wade Phillips coaching the team. Well, you notice they're like taking care of the offense, and then Wade's just got to deal with it. Wade Phillips just has to deal with all the things on defense, whether it's Aaron Donald, whether it's Marcus Peters coming in, Aqib Talib, Ogletree leaving. It's like, hey, Wade, you're the graybeard here. You're the guy who's been doing this 40 years. There's a lot on you here to make this work, and I think he can do it, but there's always the question of for how long.
Yeah, it seems like the situation that was set up originally when Mike Holmgren got here.
Yeah.
Where he was right, he was going to run the offense and leave Fred Shermer to coach the defense.
Yes. Yeah, Mike always joked about that, how his contributions on the headset were Fritz, stop him.
Hey, did you see this story about the Pro Bowl defensive lineman from Tennessee, Jarrell Casey, saying he's not going to pay attention to the new anthem policy, intends to protest, and he says, I'm going to take a fine this year. Why not? He's the first one to say it that I've seen. Do you expect this to be the first of many? How do you think this year is going to go with all of this?
Good question. Yeah, I think it's still going to be a story for sure. And then I think, you know, Trump will seize on it and make it a bigger story. And there'll be a cycle there. I was talking to Kevin Seifert, who I work with at ESPN, the other day. He covers a lot of our officiating things. And I was wondering, hey, are they trying to botch the rules and turn over all these referees in an effort to make bad officiating the number one story again next year over the anthem? Because I think if you're the league and you could have everyone talking about either concussions or the anthem or officiating looks pretty good, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. Not nearly as divisive.
I think that's the hidden story of this offseason is just what a cluster that could be, officiating-wise. But to answer your question on the anthem, yeah, I don't think it's going away.
Mike, as always, we appreciate it. Great stuff, and we'll be talking again very soon.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Mike.
There he is, Mike Sando of ESPN with a little NFL conversation here. And yeah, Jarrell Casey, the first two that I've seen.
I haven't seen anyone else.
Maybe somebody else has, but I have not seen it. But he says, I'm going to take the fine this year. Why not? Mm. He's apparently done it before, so... Good for him.
Yep.
You got the courage of your convictions. Go out there. Do your thing, man.
That's what it is.
Do your thing. All right. Our thanks to Mike Sando. Meanwhile, there was an MVP in last night's All-Star game, but it wasn't the right guy, in my opinion. It's a halftime show coming your way next with Bob Gross and Tom.
From the Alaska Airlines Studio,
this is Bob Gross and Tom.
Streaming everywhere at 710sports.com and the 710 Seattle app. It's time for the halftime show.
The half is not over.
Presented by VenueKings.com.
The half is not over. There's 3 seconds on the clock.
Revisiting the biggest stories of today at the midpoint of the show.
The halftime show. It's not easy.
Now, here's Bob, Gross, and Tom.
It's a halftime show here with Bob, Gross, and Tom. For those of you unable to tune in at the very beginning of the show, what's your problem, man?
Yeah, really, what's the deal?
The opening of the show is fresh water.
What's?
Darn right it is.
We understand. Schedules sometimes can get in the way, but we bring everybody up to speed.
We say we understand, but we don't really understand.
It doesn't make a lot of sense.
But we are going to bring you up to speed.
Yeah, we're going to do our part. We want everybody to be on the same page moving forward. So we retrace our steps, biggest stories of the day. And we started out with what took place last night, the MLB All-Star Game, which... In my opinion, it was a great weekend for MLB. I thought they did a great job with the Home Run Derby. It came off very well. Again, I still haven't seen the ratings, and I don't know if it was a success or not. But I think just from a baseball fan perspective, as somebody who loves the sport but looked at the Home Run Derby and kind of went, eh, okay, whatever.
Yeah.
I think it had some extra life this year. And I think the game ended up being very compelling, very good. You went to extra innings. And the guy that should have been the MVP was not, but he definitely gave a good accounting of himself.
Here's a 3-2. Swing and a ball hammer. Left field. Way back there. On its way. Out of here. Gene Segura. It's a 3-run homer, and the American League has jumped on top. It is 5-2. He got all of it into the bullpen in left field.
There's your MVP right there, partner.
I agree, partner. Now, that was that call was okay, but I like the Nelson Cruz call much better.
Oh, yeah! No way! No way! No way! Yeah! Woo-hoo! Woo-hoo!
awesome. That just makes me smile, man. That is so cool.
Nelson Cruz call. I'm looking at the ratings, actually. They were about the same as they were last year.
For the home run derby?
For the All-Star game itself.
Oh, okay.
See if I'm seeing anything. I'm not seeing anything.
Well, if you had play-by-play like Nelson Cruz through the whole game, it'd bring in a lot more viewers.
Not very big numbers, man.
No?
2.1 rating, 8.3 million viewers. 8 million viewers.
I wonder how that compares to the pro football, the Pro Bowl, or the NBA All-Star game.
Pro Bowl does double that. Easy.
Ugh. And that's arguably the worst of the bunch.
NBA All-Star game is probably around the same.
Or NHL as well. But
NHL doesn't do anywhere near that.
I just thought it was a good weekend for baseball, and I love that. That audio of Nelson Cruz just makes me smile. That is just awesome.
I like that they had the players mic'd up, although I do find it interesting that Mike Trout is the most boring human being on the planet, whose hobby is weather.
How often do you think he hears that?
He's going to hear it a lot more now.
Yeah, it's got to get back to him somehow. They were talking about his Q rating being like a 22 or something like that.
Well, it's Fox even doubled down on it because it started to rain during the game. They had him looking at a weather map for him and telling him what he saw, which was brutal.
So they tried to make it interesting?
Well, yes, I guess so. They tried to pretend it was interesting. But having other guys mic'd up was really cool. Give you a little insight into the game. I thought Charlie Blackman was terrific. Francisco Lindor was really good as well.
Baez going up to the plate was talking.
Yeah, we talked about that. We thought they should have done more of that.
I say mic up everybody if you can, if they're willing to. Mic up anybody who's willing to be mic'd.
How NBA All-Star game, by the way, the last couple of years, about the same numbers, about 8 million viewers.
Okay.
So it's roughly the same. But, yeah, I thought it was interesting they mic'd up the first two hitters and actually didn't mic them up. They just did it with a stick mic. So
yeah.
They just talked to them. But would have been to expand that is a good idea, I think, as players, for the most part, seem really comfortable with it.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of it's identifying guys – who are good at it is part of the deal. And look, Trout is Trout. You're going to talk to him. Bryce Harper is Bryce Harper. You're going to talk to him. And Harper was interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But for the other guys, you want to find guys who are the most willing to trade with you, to be interesting with you, or just ebullient personalities, which is what Lindor would be. Charlie Blackman, on the other hand, was very funny.
Yeah. He's got some sarcasm, some wit.
Well, yeah, they asked him, you know, because he was up there when the American League started their run. And they were talking to him then, and he was calling the guys bad luck. And Joe Buck asked him if he was superstitious. He says, "Well, I'm just stitious. I'm not superstitious. I'm just stitious." So finding guys like that was clever, and I thought it was a good weekend for baseball just in general.
What if Trout behind the scenes was just a maniac, just Mr. Personality?
Well, that'd have been awesome to see a little bit of that, but we did. I'm going to say no. Trout feels like he's often
this is authentic.
He's often compared to Mickey Mantle.
Right.
Mickey Mantle was a hillbilly from Oklahoma. You know, when he first came up, he was 19 years old from a small town in Oklahoma. Trout is not bad. He's from South Jersey and is an Eagles season ticket holder.
Mm-hmm.
But he feels like that.
Just a country kid?
He feels like, yeah. I mean, he just a throwback to a degree, which is not necessarily a bad thing.
Hey, I'd take him on this team in a second.
Oh, no, I don't think there's anyone who would take him.
I'll take him and his dull personality any day.
I don't want anyone to think that I'm mistaking that for actually mattering.
He could be mute for all I care, play for this team.
But, yeah, and he had his moment in the game last night, too.
Yeah. Yeah, I think they've done it well. And, again, Major League Baseball is something we criticize often for being behind on everything, being slow to do things. And this is one thing I think they've done really well, and hopefully they just expand upon it.
Well, and I think, in general, it's access is something that baseball can provide uniquely more than other sports can. I mean, in NBA we see it to a degree with coaches' interviews during the game. And
they
tape those during commercials, and they had a little fun with Popovich because he was so anti-doing it. But that wound up being, interesting.
Yeah.
Baseball moves at such a pace that you could really do a lot more of that, I think, without...
You could have great conversations.
Well, you could. And, I mean, you don't want to wreck guys' concentration and things like that. I understand that. But I think that in terms of trying to appeal to a new fan base, things like that are what will count.
Mm-hmm.
Not taking 5 minutes off the game.
Yes.
Reducing trips to the mound. The little bitty stuff is not going to change your... If you really feel like you need to do it, and I'm speaking for baseball, that's the sort of stuff that does it.
Yep. Story number two. Jerry DePoto talking to Joel Sherman of the New York Post and talking about Robinson Cano and how he fits when he gets back. Here's his quote. Our expectation is that D. Gordon is going to play second base. Cano is not eligible for the postseason, so we have to get D. on the field. Cano will play first base, occasionally second base, and DH. He will be in the lineup every day. Now, we talked about this to open the show, and you made the point that circumstances will dictate what he's going to do, because you don't know where you're going to be at in the race. You don't know who's hurt, who's healthy, who's producing, who's not. So that'll go a long way to dictating where he plays. But the one thing that I would stick to in that statement, or I think he's going to be sticking to, is he's going to be in the lineup every day.
Well, and I don't see the point of him giving Nelson Cruz out of the lineup to be in the game, or Ryan Healy, who's on pace to hit 30 home runs, to knock him out of the game. You've got a real hole in this lineup. It's in center field. You've got a guy who played center field for you earlier this year named D. Gordon, who played it effectively and is the key to the top of your lineup.
Mm-hmm.
You can plug Cruz in, Cano in, where he is an all-star player at second base. And you've seen Gordon make the transition once already. You don't have to do it for the entire year. But again, you know, reiterating what you said there at the top, let's wait and see what it looks like on August the 15th before holding Jerry DePoto to saying anything about what it's going to be, because who knows who's hurt, who knows where they are in the standings. There are too many X factors to really make the determination. Now, and I understand he's answering a question.
Right.
So he's trying to give an answer to a question. But, you know, in my opinion, they've got to be keeping their options open just because you don't know what the circumstances are going to be.
All right, there you go. There's a bit of what we talked about to open the show. We do it every day at 1:30. What we do after that every day is we answer your questions. Any topic, any subject, doesn't matter what the question is, just text it into 710-710, the Coors Light text line. Have an opinion already? Coming up with Bob Gross and Tom.
This is Have an Opinion Already on the Bob Gross and Tom Show. Three loudmouths, three questions, and one giant tub of hand sanitizer. Right, Bob? Let's get it on.
Let's get it on, baby. This means...
Nope. Try again.
Let's get it on.
Question one.
Have an opinion already, guys. What's the best example? This comes to us from 360. What's the best example of a movie or TV series made from a book that is better than the book?
Ooh. I never read The Godfather, so I don't know how.
Great book.
Is it better than is the movie better, though?
The book's just, no.
Because the movie's wide. I mean, you might say that is the most popular movie in history.
The book was wildly popular and successful, though. And it's more detailed. You'd like the book.
I'm trying to think of a book I've read where the movie was better. It always feels the other way around.
It's not a book that I've read, but I know that Die Hard was based on a book.
Oh, was it?
Yep.
By the way, we learned that is not a Christmas movie.
According to Bruce Willis.
Who would know?
I guess so.
If you don't take his word for it.
Even though it takes place at Christmas.
Yeah, it's not a Christmas movie.
Anyway, that would be one.
Yeah, I can't. Godfather would be the only one I could think of because it's just so highly regarded as a movie. It literally is in everybody's top five who's ever seen it.
I got a surprise for you. I would say The Body, which is actually Stand By Me. That was a Stephen King short story.
Oh, okay.
And so, and it's really good. It's really good, but it was a short story, and the movie expounded on the short story.
It was a long movie, too.
Yeah, I thought the movie was better than the book.
Huh.
Friday Night Lights is another good one.
You think the movie's better than the book?
That's considered a really good book, though.
Yeah. I prefer the movie over the book.
We'll definitely get some help on this.
People are saying Game of Thrones show is better than... Now, I never read the books. I've watched the show. I like the show, but I've never read the books.
I've done neither.
Show's good. It's not typically my kind of show, but I really got into it.
This one comes to us from the 509. Would you rather learn to fly a helicopter or drive a hydroplane?
Fly a helicopter.
You can bypass traffic with that.
Yeah.
I mean, hydroplanes, where are you driving? In a circle really fast.
On the water.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, and that's not like being on a regular boat when you get the fresh air and you're enjoying the environment.
You get a lot of fresh air, but...
Aren't you enclosed?
It's really rushing.
Aren't you enclosed in the hydro? Or no? Is there a...
Yeah, there's a closing to it. I think there are some open cockpit.
They're definitely open.
Cockpit.
They're open cockpit hydros, but
okay.
It's helicopter.
Yeah, I'd go helicopter as well. Just because you've got such a great view. There's no traffic. You can go all over the place.
Some helicopters land on water, too? Or is that...
Sure they can if they have the
pontoons.
The pontoons, yeah. We know that from a variety of action adventure shows over the years.
Hey, it floats.
Next.
Question three.
From the 425, I have to give a best man speech at a wedding this weekend. Do you have any advice on how to give a memorable one?
Don't swear. You're giving a best man speech?
Three.
I have two. Exactly same number. Three.
Yeah, I've been the best man three times. I've been a groomsman, I think, four times.
I've been a best man three times. I've been a groomsman once.
And I've played at 50, 60.
How was your speech?
They were always off the cuff. I never wrote them out.
Yeah, I never did either.
Never wrote them out. Speak from the heart.
I'm saying with very little humility that mine were really good. Yeah, speak from the heart is good advice. And you know what? It doesn't have to be long. You can keep it short. You don't have to really expound. You don't have to go in detail too much.
Yeah, if you've got good stories or things like that that everybody can get into. But yeah, if you run the risk of losing your audience if you start droning on.
Yeah.
When we were five, I remember.
Limit it to one story.
I say limit the inside jokes as well.
Yeah.
Because they're only funny between you and the groom and maybe
right.
the bride.
Right.
Try and be inclusive. If you can.
Yeah.
And good luck.
Yeah, brevity's good.
Brevity is good and humor is good. But I mean not put down humor.
right. You don't want to go up there and turn it into a roast.
Don't be sarcastic.
You don't want it to become a roast.
Yeah. Sarcasm is not your friend.
This one from the 206. Which is worse, a jamoke or a jabroni?
Well, as a follower of the Iron Sheik on Twitter, I'll say a jabroni.
And as a fan of The Rock from his wrestling days, I'll also say a jabroni.
Did he use that word?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not even a wrestling fan, and the Iron Sheik follow just cracks me up because it's kind of a one-note thing, but it just...
Jabroni still feels like a wrestling term.
Is it?
No, I don't think it is, but I've just heard a lot of guys say it.
206 asking, yeah, but can they land on fresh water?
I mean, they could probably land on any kind of water.
That's awesome.
Let's see, what does the Urban Dictionary say about jabroni?
It's probably a curse word. It's probably something really awful.
206 brings up Shawshank Redemption.
See, again, a lot of these I haven't read the books. The movies are phenomenal. I didn't read that. Well, there was another one that they brought. Fight Club. Fight Club, I love that movie, but I didn't read the book.
Pretty famous book, though.
Fight Club?
Yeah.
Well, this, according to the texter, 425, said Fight Club was a better movie than the book. Even the author admits it.
Hmm.
Is that true?
Well, I haven't read the book.
That's a good sign.
Well, that the author admitted that, though.
509 says, what's the best poolside cocktail?
Probably... something with rum.
Planner's
Punch.
I thought you didn't like rum.
I like all alcohol, Bob.
Is that a brown?
Stuff. That's a brown.
You said stay away from browns.
Brown. It can also be a clear. It doesn't have to be a brown.
All right.
But a rum drink with a little pineapple, a little fruit in it by the pool, a daiquiri maybe, something like that.
With an umbrella in it?
Yeah.
Pineapple wedge?
Something festive and colorful?
Something colorful and fruity.
Okay. I could do that. I don't know the drinks. I'm kind of a one drink guy.
Although I'm more of a vodka guy myself.
That's what I do.
But on the other hand, I mean, like the last couple of really hot days we've had here, really hot days.
Yeah.
As you well know.
Oh yes, I do know.
Stayed really hot in your place.
Yes.
Sometimes nothing beats a ice cold beer.
Has really? To
be, just I'm not talking about 10 because I'm not really a beer drinker, and I'm not talking about good beer. I'm talking about American lager. Not fancy pants beer.
you just go Coors Light or...
something like that. Really, really cold on a hot day sometimes works really well.
Done that lately?
2 days ago.
Okay.
Yep.
How'd it work out for you?
I had my favorite Belgian lager, actually.
Which is?
Budweiser.
Oh, okay. They're going to go Löwenbräu or something like that.
No, Budweiser.
Although I don't know where that's made, so...
Germany. Löwenbräu.
People are saying... double run rum runner, Mai Tais, mojitos, Moscow Mule.
Yeah, well, Moscow Mule is a little harsh, but the other ones are good.
Isn't that like a ginger beer or something?
Yeah.
Seems to be a popular drink, though. I see that.
It does.
Hear that ordered a lot when I'm in a bar. Anything else?
I think that's it.
It's the only thing grabbing you?
Yeah.
All right. It was fresh water, man. Good job.
Thank you, Bob.
Good job. All right. Will baseball ever become part of America's consciousness again? We're gonna look back at some of the gems from El Hombre as we do every week. That's coming your way next with Bob Grosentom.